The test is in four parts, part 1, part 2, part 3, and part 4. Now look at part 1.
Part 1.
I'd like to make a transfer, please. You want to transfer some money?
First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 6. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 6.
Good afternoon. Hello. How can I help you? I'd like to make a transfer, please. You want to transfer some money? That's fine. Let me just bring up some details. Right. Here we are. Can you tell me your name, please?
It's Alice Deltour.
OK. And your date of birth?
20th of February 1982.
Right, and for security, can I have the first letter of your password?
It's B.
And the fifth letter?
That's F.
Fine. Now, where do you want to make the transfer to and from?
I'd like to send money from my current account abroad.
Which country are you sending it to?
To China. My boyfriend is on holiday there, and he's run out of money.
Oh dear. China, okay. Now, there are several ways to do this. We can do it by credit card, by electronic transfer, by check or by banker's draft.
I'm not sure. What's the best way?
Well, that all depends. The simplest way is by check, really.
I just write the check and send it?
Yes, but it can be very slow and take a long time for the money to clear. Between 3 to 4 weeks. How soon do you need the money to get there?
I'd like it to get there in the next couple of weeks.
So really, sending a check is going to be too slow.
Yes, I think so.
Let's look at electronic transfer then. This usually takes between 2 and 5 working days.
That's 2 to 5 days.
Working or business days. If you send it on Friday, it will get there the following Friday at the latest.
I see. That's much better.
Yes, but we do charge a fee for this. We charge a flat fee of £21, and on top of that, the receiving bank may charge a fee, and an agent may also charge you for transferring the money between banks.
So, how much is it altogether?
We can't give you an exact amount. You need to check it with the receiving bank and any agents that they use.
I see.
Also, you can send it in sterling or dollars from here, but there will be an additional fee depending on the exchange rate when you convert it into renminbi.
So, there will be another charge too?
I'm afraid so.
Does it make any difference if I send it in dollars or sterling?
It could make a difference according to which currency has the best exchange rate. The other difference is this. If you send dollars, the amount goes through the US clearing system. We send the money to our branch in London. They then send it to our branch in New York, and the New York branch sends it to the bank in China.
It goes all around the world then.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 7 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 7 to 10.
What about if I send sterling?
In that case, we send it to our branch in London. From there, it may go directly to China, unless the bank in China has an agent in London, in which case we transfer it to the London agent, and they send the money on to China.
So how do I proceed with the transfer?
OK, first we'll need some details about the beneficiary from you.
The who?
The beneficiary. The person receiving the money.
OK. What do you need to know?
We'll need the full name of the beneficiary and their account number.
OK.
You need to tell us the name of the bank in China and the address of the branch. We also need the bank's sort code and the SWIFT number.
What's a SWIFT number?
Basically, it's an interbank code. It helps banks identify each other through a unique code number.
OK. And that's spelt?
S-W-I-F-T, SWIFT. And the final thing we need is the reason for sending the money.
You need a reason from me? I just told you my boyfriend's run out of money.
Well, we don't need a reason. The receiving government needs to know why the money is entering the country, and we have to be able to tell them.
Okay, so from me you need the bank's name, the address of the branch, the sort code, and SWIFT number, the beneficiary's name and account number, and a reason for sending the payment.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so I'll check these out and come back to you with them so we can go ahead with the transfer.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part two.
Part two.
She's going to talk to us today about the pleasures of running her own business.
First, look at questions 11 to 14. Listen carefully.
Good morning and welcome to this month's Small Business Club meeting. I'm very pleased to welcome Amy Lynn, who owns and runs a catering business in the local area. She's going to talk to us today about the pleasures of running her own business. Amy.
Thank you very much. Now, I started my business 2 years ago, selling very high-quality ready-made meals using all organic ingredients sourced from the local area. And I have to say, it has been the happiest time of my life, with sales doing extremely well. I've had to work very hard, and this has meant a rather limited social life. But I really value the fact that I'm my own boss, and I can decide what I do, you know, when I think I'm ready to try something new and creative, and when to continue with what I'm doing, and so forth. Now, I got the idea to produce these dishes when I was visiting a local supermarket. And I looked at what was on offer in the ready meals section. Lots of low-quality, unhealthy packs. And I thought, I could do so much better. I discussed it with friends. Some of them thought it was a great idea, and others thought there wouldn't be a big enough market for such expensive products. But I went ahead with my idea anyway. And as I say, it's been very successful. At the moment, I employ two people, one to help me with the actual preparation and cooking, and the other to work on the financial side, doing invoices and accounts and marketing. My business is expanding, but I'm not ready to employ anybody new just yet. At the moment, I'm negotiating with a local organic farmer who would like to sell my meals at his farm shop. We've already agreed that I will sell in his shop in the new year, but I just don't know how much. It probably won't be enormous. My sales in total at the moment are only about £7,000 a month. And at least for the next few months, I don't plan on increasing that. I think the thing which will make me take on new staff is if I just feel too exhausted and stop enjoying what I'm doing. And plans for the long-term future are a little vague at the moment. I've been thinking that in a couple of years' time, I'll start to sell on the internet. My sales will increase quite a bit. I won't advertise because that might mean I would expand so fast that I couldn't continue to use all organic ingredients. and I'm very anxious to go on doing that. But I think I'll need a bigger kitchen and packing area, otherwise we'll get very cramped.
Before the broadcast continues, look at questions 15 to 20. You will now listen to the second part of the talk.
Now, I've emphasised how much pleasure I get out of running my own business, but, of course, one of the quickest ways to lose heart is to try operating without sufficient capital. So, in the second part of my talk, I want to share with you how I got enough money to finance my business. The most significant part of my capital came from a grant from the Small Business Agency, or SBA, as everyone calls it. And this is how you go about getting it. The first thing you have to do is to draw up a business plan. Now, don't make this too long and complicated. I would say it should just be up to 2 pages in length. I've seen some people's efforts go up to 10 pages. Well, frankly, I don't think anyone will read it if it's that long. The next thing is it's worthwhile getting it checked. Now, don't rely on an accountant for this. Your best bet is to go to your bank and get them to look through it. Only if they're happy should you go ahead with your application. If all is well, then you should finalise your submission. Then your next step is to send it to the SBA. Now, they advise you not to do this by email, but by post. However, they say this situation might change in the near future. So, when the SBA receive your grant application, they'll judge whether your business idea is interesting, that is, likely to benefit from their grant. If they think it's good, they'll invite you to interview. And then the successful candidates can get a maximum of £20,000. I got £18,000, which wasn't quite the top amount, but still enormously useful, as you can imagine. Now, if there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part three.
Part three.
You will hear two students, Jenna and Marco, discussing a business studies project they have to do. You now have 15 seconds to read questions 21 to 24.
Come on, Marco. We've got to get on and sort out this project for Professor Buckley.
Hang on. I want to make sure we've got all the information. Now, where are we?
Well, today we need to sort out exactly what we're going to do and how we're going to divide the work up.
Okay. How long have we got, by the way?
The end of term is April 6th. And he said to hand it in on week 8, so that's March 25th at the latest, because the beginning of that week is the 21st, so not long.
Right. Have you got the notes there?
Yes. He wants us to do a fairly small-scale study, like the last one, on whether or not businesses were offering more benefits to staff. Mm. And we've now got to look at the rise in older workers. It should be fairly straightforward.
Yeah, as long as we keep it small. Mm. Who's marking it?
I don't know. Sometimes he gets the PhD students to mark it for him.
Oh, actually, it just says here, a senior lecturer. Mm. I suppose it's too much for Professor Barclay to do them all.
Yeah. Anyway, how are we going to go about this?
Well, we have to decide how big we want it to be and who...
Yeah, but I think we must sort out a timetable for the project. Otherwise, nothing will get done.
Okay. Do you want to do that?
All right. I'll do it as soon as we finish here.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 25 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 25 to 30.
Okay, what do we have to do now for the project? What's the best way to go about it?
Well, Professor Carter suggested we set up a focus group to get some in-depth interviews, but I think that'll take a lot of time.
Yeah, I agree. If we did a focus group, we'd have to spend time deciding who to include in it, and it's not necessary to do one anyway.
Oh, fine.
And if you agree, I think we should get in touch with the businesses on the list Professor Carter gave us and ask them if they're prepared to participate.
Sounds good. Then we can go there, give them questionnaires and collect them later.
Exactly.
Okay. Then, do we need to book one of those study rooms in the library so we can work together to input the data? Perhaps not, as I guess just one of us could just sort it out, actually.
Yes, that would be easier. A lot of what we're doing is qualitative, so it'll be writing up rather than statistics. No software for that, I'm afraid.
And I think it would look better if we had actual shots of some of the staff, because we're citing appearance as a factor in employability, aren't we?
Yeah, okay. I'll factor that all in when I sort everything out tonight.
I'm glad we decided to work together. I think it's going to work out well.
Yes, well, given that we had to work in pairs on this project, I think we were right to choose each other.
Hmm.
We complement each other academically, as we're each good at what the other isn't. In fact, we should have tried working together before.
Yes. Now, how shall we split the work? I'll do the analysis, shall I?
Oh, okay.
It's just that it might be faster, because I'm used to doing it. Although, your English is better than mine. I need more practice at reading, really.
Okay, I'll do the presentation then, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, sure. I don't mind speaking in public, but I hate preparing all the notes for them.
The thing is, the tutor said one person should do the whole presentation, and he said he expects me to do it because I haven't done one yet.
No, that's fine. Now, let's see.
That is the end of part 3.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part 4.
Part 4.
For my project, I chose to look at a subject which has interested me for a long time. Why is it that some people are much happier than others? More upbeat and optimistic?
First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
For my projects, I chose to look at a subject which has interested me for a long time. Why is it that some people are much happier than others? More upbeat and optimistic? I should say that I regard myself as a very happy person, and so are most of my family, as far as I know. But that wasn't the reason why I chose this project. Some people think that nowadays we're becoming more depressed than we used to be, but I'm not convinced by that. And I came across some interesting research which tries to look at the subject from a positive point of view. It emerged from a movement called the Science of Well-being. And I decided I wanted to investigate it for my project because it involves several different types of factors. It can be viewed not just from the mental or physical side, but also from the social perspective. Now, in a large-scale study of several thousand people of different ages, researchers found three main characteristics which appeared again and again in people who identified themselves as happy. The most significant factor was that you don't have to be someone who does something brilliant, discovers penicillin or composes a symphony, for example. But happy people do seem to know what their strengths are. This enables them to make the best of themselves and not to dwell on what they're doing badly. Another striking finding was that happy people tend to be very curious, not about family gossip or things like that, but about larger issues, like current events. I remember one person the researchers interviewed had never learned to read, but he was happy because he kept up through TV news. And then, and this surprised me, people don't have to have lots of friends to be happy. But they do have to be able to appreciate what they do have, the good fortune they've had, and how different their lives could have been if they hadn't been so fortunate. Turning now to what the research says should be avoided if people are going to stay happy. The three things that stand out are as follows. First of all, reflection time on your own is good, but not if people use that time regretting mistakes and blaming themselves for everything. Another point is that people shouldn't worry about getting angry sometimes. It's part of what makes us human, and it can be healthy. But they shouldn't always try to find fault with others. This leads to a great deal of negativity. And the final thing which should be avoided if a person is going to be happy is always trying to compete. Of course, it can be fun to try to beat another person in a game, but not if this becomes your only aim. It's much better to enjoy taking part in the game rather than being obsessive about winning it. Now, I've tried to do a lot of reading on the subject of well-being research, and I have to say, it does have its critics. It's widely accepted that this positive approach does help us understand what happiness is and why some people are very unhappy. However, this has been dealt with many times before. The critics basically say that it's the old science under a new name, with only very small changes in approach. Well, that might be the case. It may bring us very little closer to finding out exactly how our brains work. But I think that sometimes even a very small change in perspective can bring real and long-lasting benefits. Above all, I feel that well-being research might help us to move away from simply prescribing drugs for depression. It helps us to explore alternative ways of dealing with unhappiness. I'd like to finish my short presentation by mentioning one of the people who was interviewed by the research team. Ada Clark is exactly 100 years old and still going strong, still giving piano recitals in her local town. She regards herself as a very happy person, and that this positive spirit has kept her healthy over her long life. But the reason I'm mentioning her now is because not one of the factors she says makes her happy is on the list I mentioned before. Every human life is unique, and we cannot guarantee what will make each one of us happy.
That is the end of part four.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.